They do it because they were born to do it. Just like Willy Wonka was born to be a candy man, and you look like you were born to be a Wonkerer. Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with dew, cover it in chocolate and a miracle or two? The candy man. The candy man can. Posse mixes it with love and makes the world taste good.
Who can take a rain? Everybody, we're back with another commission podcast. This one from Josh from Saxbaha again. He has previous commissioned Screamers, PCU, Wrath of Khan. He's back for the quadruple dip, everlasting podcaster, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the 1971 version. You don't even have to distinguish that, because the remake with Johnny Depp is titled Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was the original title of the story by Roald Dahl, who wrote the screenplay for this film. I did not know this at the time I sat down to watch it, but apparently he disowned this film.
Okay.
After it got some rewrites by another screenwriter, and specifically, spoilers for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, by the way.
I just had a misconception of mine corrected.
Oh.
Inadvertently. I always assumed Roald Dahl was a woman.
Oh. I actually don't know that she's not.
Oh, okay.
But I'm pretty sure that I've heard his wife refer to different things after he's died.
I don't know why I thought that, but I just did.
Yeah, so Roald Dahl wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. This is called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He didn't like the fact that the emphasis he felt was more on Willy Wonka. He didn't like the fact that they repurposed a minor character, Slugworth, and made him the villain of the film.
Okay.
I thought this is a little Alan Moore, straining the gnat, gulping the camel kind of stuff, but what are you going to do? He's the creator, and he's entitled to his opinion. Mm-hmm. Also did not know that this film was produced by the Quaker Oats Company as an experiment in interesting and wholesome family filmmaking.
Yeah, I think that was maybe the most shocking thing I read in Roger Ebert's review of the film.
Which, if they did that today, there would be an actual Quaker as a character. Willy Wonka would be wearing the wide-brimmed hat.
Factory.
And it'd be the Oats Factory, and they'd be making chocolate oatmeal bars. And
yeah.
The Oompa Loompas would be Opa oatmeal Loompas. It'd just be product placement after product placement.
Right.
Kind of stand up on the Quaker Oats that I don't, I watched the whole thing with credits and did not get Quaker Oats. Maybe, I my eyes glazed over during the pretty long credit sequence in the beginning, which still entertaining, a very psychedelic candy thing.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, strange that an oatmeal company would be promoting essentially all this candy.
Yeah.
It seems to go against maybe their other marketing strategies.
Oh, but unless they're really believed in families and teaching morals and stuff, which this film attempts to do.
I think it's got some twisted morals, but maybe not twisted morals, but twisted ideas of what makes a successful human being.
Okay. So I've seen this movie a time or two before, and I've always been shocked at how relatively adult it is in some of the sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And how it just seems, especially when you think about this being made in the 1970s, that this is just designed for people to get high on some kind of psychedelic substance and watch.
Sure.
And I guess you can label the same accusation against Wizard of Oz, although I don't think that was the intention. So I guess it's psychedelic in its own way. But after reading a bunch of reviews, I kind of come around and I think this is a pretty good kids movie. And the things that I had assumed might be too scary, or there's a lot of arguments about that, children are kind of programmed to accept these kinds of, they recognize that they're not in danger of being sucked up a pipe or turned into a blueberry, because they wouldn't do the bad things that these children are doing. Like, they get the lesson that this Charlie, the Willy Wonka is not a scary person.
Mm-hmm.
Although he is kind of
in some spots.
I mean, honestly, the thing that shocked me when I was watching this with a more critical eye is how long it takes until you get to the Chocolate Factory.
Right.
And how kind of relatively uninterested I was in all that, and how kind of like just insane it was. And then how much of this film lives and dies by Gene Wilder's performance.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, Gene Wilder nails it in this film, like he does every film he's in. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I've seen a bad Gene Wilder performance, but I can't think of a better person, even Johnny Depp, to play this character.
No, I'm going to compare and contrast the two films.
I haven't seen the new one, so...
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but...
I don't know anything about it. I don't... Like, I've seen the look that Johnny Depp goes for, and yeah. it's a little bit more intense.
Yeah.
A little bit scarier.
Uh-huh.
But you mentioned, you know, that kids might not do the same things that these horrible, naughty children do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what Quaker was going for. Maybe they're saying... Look, moderation on the candy, kids. We know you love fucking candy, but chill and have some oatmeal.
And share. You know, it's not just about, right. like, all about you, and it's not all about television. I mean, because they take shots at all kinds of things.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But, fat kids, but, I mouthy mean, like, kids.
It all comes down to, like, these kids are desiring more candy than they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you look at like the Oompa Loompa songs, right, they're dishing out the morals a little heavy-handedly to these children. So
I don't think the Oompa Loompa's hands overall would be lighter than average.
Well, they stack them up and their powers combined, sort of thing.
Uh-huh. They slapped across the face with five sets of hands instead of one.
Right.
So, all right. Fair point.
Anyway, where were you going?
I was giving you some runway. Are you to make your point?
Oh, I mean, I have many things to talk about. Would you believe that the new version of this came out 12 years ago?
I was shocked because I was like, my first thought as when I'm reading more recent, and my first thought is like, oh, I wonder if Roger Ebert is dead for this one, because you know he's been dead like what now 4 years,
something like that, yeah.
And I was thinking like, oh, it's right in that window, but it's 2005, man.
I know.
We're really old, dude. So before we go on, I want to get to Josh's the comments here. This movie is directed by Mel Stewart, as I mentioned, screenplay by Roald Dahl. There's stars a lot of people that I'd never seen before or since, and also Gene Wilder. Josh says, I saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory at the movies this weekend, which obviously was back, I think, of August of last year. It was re-released due to the death of Gene Wilder, and he had previously wanted us to do the movie Real Genius, and he changed it to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, rather.
Mm-hmm.
This film has always been a favorite of mine and one that has transports me back to my childhood, especially the scene where they enter the main area of the Chocolate Factory where everything is edible.
The chocolate room.
The music, aside from Cheer Up Charlie Gagfest, is iconic, and I always sing along when I'm watching. Do you know that... Sammy Davis Jr. recorded The Candyman as a single, and it was a hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say he wrote it.
No.
He did a cover of it,
so.
Right?
Yeah. Like, okay. Some of the music in this film has, like, gotten wider acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
Gene Wilder brought an edge to the film that I can only begin to appreciate as an adult, and the whimsical nature of the trip to the factory still makes me smile at the ripe old age of 35. I know Roald Dahl basically disowned the film and disagreed with the Slugworth villain angle, but I've always found this movie vastly superior to the recent remake with Johnny Depp. Not only did I find the film strange and nowhere near as fun as the original, Depp's performance has always seemed a bit pedophilic in nature.
Oh.
I would love to know what your relationship you guys have with the film, your thoughts on Wilder's performance, and how you think it compares to the newer version. So my relationship, I don't know why, but I never saw this film until I was I think I was like not a Jehovah's Witness anymore.
How did you get out of the
'cause there's nothing,
the 80s without seeing
there's
this
There's nothing
thing.
That I can think that's objectionable in this movie that was
right.
like, and I don't think there was certainly nothing forbidden about it. I just, and my mom and dad made sure I saw like The Little Rascals and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang and Mary
right?
Poppins and all this other crap. Honestly, I don't know why it never came up.
Huh.
Because it's also very hard to not even just see it on television.
Right. That's where I saw it, like 100 times.
Yeah. So this is, I think, the second time that I've seen the whole thing.
Wow. Okay, yeah, my relationship is entirely different. I grew up seeing this movie on TV like every other weekend for a period.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's always kind of been a favorite of mine. It's, you know, it's not up there in like the top five or whatever, but it's one of those movies like, you know, The Godfather or Star Wars, where you sit down, it's on TV, and you go, yep, that's what I'm doing for the next hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've seen this movie many times, and I always love it. I remember the little moments. I remember the songs. I remember especially, like he said, Gene Wilder's performance in it, which to me makes the movie.
And he does a lot of subtle things. Like he quotes famous poems. He is menacing sometimes. He is unhinged sometimes. Like the scene of him losing his mind in that tunnel.
Amazing.
Is the one that sticks out in my mind the first time I saw it. Like, God damn, this is a kid's movie? Because I think the images flash too fast for most children to pick up, but there's like a centipede crawling across a man's face. There's a chicken, a live chicken that just gets straight up beheaded.
Yep.
Cleavered. Like going on in these like flashes in the background as he's starting to screaming about the fires of the fires of hell were invoked at one point.
I think so, yeah.
The rowers are rowing. They're showing no signs of slowing, and it's the fires of hell are stoking. I don't know. It's crazy, but I laughed at a lot of this stuff. Even as like a little pratfall to begin, like, you know, as he introduced himself was funny. And
I can't get over his bendy cane.
Yeah,
like such a nice little touch that doesn't need to be there, but it is, and I love it.
Yeah. I mean, the movie's dated, but, like, the visual style is such that it doesn't really matter. And I don't know. Like, some things, like, just I found it hysterical, like the foam mobile.
Mm-hmm.
And just everyone getting blasted in the face with this foam.
Yeah.
And, you know, Gene Wilder's.
The big question, why?
Yeah. And then he goes through the gate, and it's like, it's bizarre. And they don't even really explain it. They don't explain why he had to go to light speed or plaid speed with the Oompa Loompa-powered boat.
Right.
To get from the chocolate factory to the experimental room either. Like, it just doesn't, like, Willy Wonka, it doesn't explain why he needs a rocket-powered elevator. Like,
it's true, yeah. I mean, it's just unbridled imagination going on in this factory. And so my review of it is going to definitely be tongue-in-cheek, a lot of silly things I'm going to point out and harp on. But, I mean, the imagination in this movie is outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
From the factory to the boat rides to, I mean, top to bottom. It's amazing. I think that Willy Wonka's goal here is to both test the children and torture the parents to make them pay in a sort of way for, you know, raising their children the way they have.
So, I mean, I think it's a bad idea to overanalyze this film too much, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Hmm. Okay. I'm not sure that I would say that.
Okay, because like what I don't understand is what if he didn't get a Charlie?
Right.
What if the fifth child had been equally a shit? Would he have done this again? Because he clearly was trying, like, for whatever reason, he was tired of making chocolate, or the world had beat him down, or like the pressure of being the number one chocolate man in the world.
With Slugworth nipping at your heels.
And he, I guess he wants to inflict this existence on some innocent child, or he, you know, or maybe just getting old and like, you know, like you read between the lines, he can't make children himself. So he knows that what he knows about chocolate, he is going to take a lifetime to impart. So while he's still a relatively young man, he gets a protege that he can, you know, mold into like a Dread Pirates Robert style, you know, new Willy Wonka.
But I
just feel like I just wonder, like, what was his plan if this golden ticket came out and there was, you know, or what happens? Because, you know, I don't think there's that many terrible children in the world. Now maybe that's one of the things, is like self-selects, like apparently like Veruca Salt, who would like send all of his factory workers unboxing chocolate to find the golden ticket.
She's the worst by far, right?
Or like naturally greedy children are going to eat hundreds of candy bars, or like maybe there's a little self-selection in this.
Or Violet, who I'm not really sure how. I think she just got lucky.
Yeah,
I think Violet just got lucky.
Well,
she switched from gum to chocolate bars, but she got lucky,
right? But she, you know, she took her prodigious gum budget and turned it to chocolate. But what the other thing is equally interesting is like, okay, what if you had five naughty children? What if you had like four perfectly nice children?
Right.
Like that would have been an essentially meaner film if he's essentially winnowing down these children on ever more trivial. Because the other the question I have is, why is Charlie considered good, like, even though his grandpa almost fucked him out of the prize? Because as I remember the first time I saw this, when they were drinking the fizzy soda illicitly, I'm like, how is this any different than the German kid falling into the chocolate river?
Yeah, I mean,
like that kid just lost his balance. He was encouraged to sample. Like, everybody was pigging out in that fucking room. What, the fat kid falls in? Oh, your center of gravity's fucked. I don't.
Right.
The moral.
And that room, the fizzy lifting drink room, is designed to kill people, right?
It seems like it. Yeah, if you didn't figure out that you could belch, you're dead.
Right. So the only saving grace there is that they figure a way out of, to avoid their sure death.
Right.
That doesn't make them any less morally responsible there.
No, they stole the drink. They were. I mean, I just don't. And maybe that's one of the things that Roald Dahl cited as something he didn't like, the fizzy drink. And maybe it is, because it kind of muddles the morals of the story.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, so I kind of agree with that. But then, you know, in the end, he does something to make up for it, right? He has the opportunity here to go sell Slugworth a gobstopper, and he chooses not to, even though this man has been a righteous shit the whole time.
Right. Because that's the thing. I didn't understand the significance of him giving Willy Wonka a gobstopper, because, like, he's fucking Willy Wonka. He's got all the gobstoppers he needs. He only need one. So
sure, yeah.
So, like, him giving is kind of like saying that... that's a very subtle point.
Well,
Not even sure Charlie knew what he was doing there.
Okay, fair. But it showed the true nature of Charlie, right? His kind heart. He didn't.
I mean, the whole movie showed that, and which almost makes me think that maybe do you think that there's a chance that Willy Wonka, through some kind of metaphysical means, guided that last ticket to Charlie? Like, are we supposed to understand that, or is this? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know.
It's such a coincidence, you know? He gets so lucky with this golden ticket.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's an implication there that fate has intervened,
the
right?
Implication?
Being that
if
he gets on the boat, fate will intervene.
Yeah,
but
it got dark on that boat, so I'm saying.
It sure did. Sure did.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel that's where I'm like, I don't know how much depth this movie warrants in examining it, because ultimately it's a morality tale for children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, morality tales and what do they call that thing where it's, you know, it's really about it's Narnia, but it's really about Jesus.
Allegory.
Okay. Any kind of more moral or allegorical work, it's like, does it really bear that much scrutiny and examination? But this one's I don't know. Like, these little plot details kind of bother me. The other one that really stuck out, and I know this is like a very trite observation, but I did make it originally for the first time, is like, what the fuck is this? These grandparents are bedridden, and Charlie is seen as kind of a saint by doing this paperboy routine and giving his money to his grandparents and his mom to help him, you know, buy loaves of bread and whatnot. And he spends his last dimes on chocolate bars for Grandpa and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Grandpa finds out he's got this opportunity to go to the chocolate factory, and all of a sudden he's up and singing
and dancing. Yeah,
like you can't deliver papers.
No.
Like, he's literally flying through the factory 30 minutes from now, and you cannot throw a paper.
Yeah, Grandpa is despicable. He's easily the worst character in the film.
He kind of is.
Because clearly this is a ruse that he's been keeping up for years, right?
There's no other way to look at it.
It started as, Grandpa, help out with the yard work. Well, I'm not feeling so good. Right. You know, my legs just aren't what they used
to
be.
It's the gout.
Grandpa, come do dishes. Oh, I can't get out of bed. I just can't do it. And 20 years on, he's still keeping up the ruse until he finds this golden ticket. Until Charlie finds this golden ticket and feels so bad for his bedridden grandfather that he wishes he could come, and Grandpa springs out of bed.
Yeah.
Magically healed by the thought of endless candy.
I mean, that's why I'm like, I wonder if there's a metaphysical component that's in the Roald Dahl book that didn't translate.
Maybe,
that, like, the golden ticket is like the fucking cocoons in cocoon. Like,
could be.
It juices him up. It's like the equivalent of HGH, man.
Although you notice something in the chocolate factory when he's got his hands on Charlie's shoulders may be a contributing factor.
Grandpa, dual Coke nails on his pinkies. Look at the scene where there's a scene where they're all standing together and he's got his hands on his shoulders, close up on Charlie's factory. Grandpa's rocking two Carrie Fisher style Coke nails. And I think that's
what got him in bed.
That's the golden ticket for Grandpa. Like, get him an eight ball and get him out there selling newspapers. But it's a vicious cycle. You know, like, you got some enough newspapers to cover the eight ball. And then it's like you get habituated to it and you build up a tolerance.
Right. And just leads right back to the bed.
Right.
So let's continue on this grandpa train, because I think grandpa is filling Charlie's head with a bunch of nonsense throughout this entire movie. He is an instigator, both in the chocolate factory and in Charlie's life. He tells him, Forget about the odds of finding this ticket, Charlie. You know why you're going to find this ticket? Because you want it more. Now, here's a fucking pile of scratch-offs that Grandpa's got. Go in the corner and fucking win me some money, kid.
It's like telling a child, like, if you believe in God enough, Grandpa will be healed of cancer.
Right.
Like, when Grandpa dies of cancer, or is healed either, but when he probably dies of cancer, you're saddling the kid that he didn't believe hard enough, that he didn't have enough faith, that he didn't love Grandpa enough. Like, that's pretty fucked.
Telling this kid that he can win the lottery just by wishing hard enough.
Is it possible this family is destitute and ruined because Grandpa just stop putting 90% of his paycheck into the numbers game?
I think that's a philosophy that is perpetuated through the generations of this family.
Wake up, sheeple. Quaker's trying to pull the hoodwink on you. They're trying to get you a bunch of degenerate chocolate-eating gamblers.
And that's not where it ends. I mean, Grandpa also goads him into drinking the fizzy drinks, which almost gets them both killed.
That's what I'm saying.
Grandpa also tells him to blindly sign contracts because they have nothing left to lose. Grandpa is filling this kid's head full of shit that is going to ruin him.
Is Paul Giamatti's friend in Sideways. Every idea he has is terrible. He's always almost getting his ass kicked and ruining things with the whip. Like, Grandpa is Zach Galifianakis in The Hangover. Yeah. Grandpa is a terrible, terrible sidekick of a person.
He's
Ziggy or Iggy or whatever in season 2 of The Wire.
And then he seizes upon the worst of himself at the very end, where he says, fuck this guy, we're going to go to Slugworth.
Right.
Almost ruining the whole operation for Charlie here.
Right.
Like, Grandpa's despicable.
Grandpa is Satan tempting Christ in the desert.
He's
the worst. He's the worst.
Although, I have to say, I truly love the scene where Grandpa gets out of bed. I mean, I love that scene. Maybe it's because I saw it as a kid. Maybe it's because I have some residual feelings about it. But, man, that scene is good.
It's very rare that I get to turn the telescope around and watch you be giddy about something fucking stupid.
Right.
So I cherish that. I cherish that. Okay. Because I don't get it. All I'm seeing is Grandpa getting out of bed after neglecting the family for 20 years. And then that weird double banger king size thing in the middle of the fucking, like, really?
Yeah, well, they got a lot of decrepit relatives, apparently.
I guess, and the only way their feet can stay warm is if they're nuzzled in the armpits of the same-sex opposite grandparents,
you know? So what is going on here? Is this like I was going to say Depression era, but I don't think this takes place in America.
It seems like it takes place in Carcassonne, France. Like, when they zoom out at this end, like, that's the only thing I can think.
So it was filmed in the outskirts of Munich, I think, what I read on Wikipedia.
Sense. Right.
And they wanted it to be kind of nondescript, which it's descript as fuck as an American.
Right.
Can I just say that? Like, the license plates on the cars,
It's not any town, any place, any country.
It looks like one of the wings of Disneyland. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Nothing you would see here. So we knew it was over in Europe somewhere. But we were kind of trying to figure that out because Charlie's clearly American, right?
Right.
I mean, based on his accent, Grandpa's fucking American.
Right.
Wonka's American.
The cowboy. I mean, there's two kids that are explicitly American.
Right.
And that is, it's Violet and the whoever the cowboy kid is.
Yeah.
I don't know about Veruca.
Something TV.
Also,
Mike TV, I think is his name.
Unter or whatever his name is. Mm-hmm.
Olaf.
Is obviously Glue, his last name. He's obviously German.
Yeah.
I think they explicitly say he's like Bavarian.
They maybe? Do. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, there's
so local boy makes good, I guess, with the the Munich.
Uh huh.
I don't know, but he didn't make that good.
That was a the Munich Board of Tourism demanded that there be a rotund German child
maybe
represented in the film.
What about the beginning of this movie with the montage? Did that does that work for you? Because it's a long one, and they're just disguising the credits here. But
no, I like the total the candy montage was clutch.
Okay,
and you know
I do think it sets a tone,
and it certainly serves its purpose if you are those mind expanding people watching this thing late at night because you're bored. Like because it's definitely a visual treat.
And then it goes right into Bill's candy shop,
mm-hmm.
which. I honestly don't see how this man, how Bill is still in business.
I think he's a front for Wonka. He's like getting these children addicted.
Because he's making it rain, candy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like not like he stiffs Charlie later on in the movie for his nickel. In the first of the movie, he's just literally taking scoops and just throwing them in the air. And
I don't understand it because Charlie is standing outside the window looking in as if.
Right.
It's off limits, but candy is flying.
Just get
kid,
in
get
there,
in
man.
There.
I think the kids, it's a running joke with them. It's like, you know what? Go over Bill's house, get him singing Candyman, and then right. he loses his fucking mind. But, you know.
Who can go bankrupt? Right.
Give you diabetes. Yeah. he's a crazy guy. Also, the other back to the grandpa.
Oh, boy.
Because I'm looking at my notes. Grandpa can't make the supreme sacrifice in 20 years of kicking the tobacco habit.
Oh my God, you're right.
Because Charlie's like, oh, now that I got this paper gig, Grandpa, you can have as many pipes as you want.
Uh huh. Yeah, I mean that can't be doing good thing. I mean,
no,
Charlie could quit his job if not for the smoking.
Yeah. How much is Grandpa spending? Like they can't.
And Charlie,
buying a loaf of bread was like a minor miracle to this family, and this fucker's smoking a pipe. Go to hell, Grandpa.
Well, I feel like that was Charlie's doing. Charlie wanted like
maybe that's
Grandpa,
what
you are a drain on the family.
Yeah, he was. Charlie's the Grim Reaper. He's like right. You need to smoke three times as many pipes, and once you, I'm gonna then
right.
make sure you blow it in all these other bags' faces. You know?
Eat all this chocolate, blow smoke in these fools' faces. Yeah,
that when he comes in and kisses his grandparents on the forehead, that was the kiss of death he was trying to administer every day.
He's trying to decimate his family, I think.
The other thing is, like, I thought it was funny how Bill called the kids, like, you guys seem like future wonkers to me. It's like, it seemed like a terrible, terrible slur.
It sounds like
bunch of wonkers.
Yeah.
Bunch of wonkers. and then the other thing is, I guess, low-key that the, oh, man, this is such a tale for our times. This city had been decimated by an economic blight because Wonka had shut down the chocolate factory.
Right.
And replaced all the workers with Oompa Loompa slaves.
Refugees. It depends.
Certainly they're refugees, but like it's at least exploited. Like, yes,
oh,
I'm
yeah.
sure they
yeah.
love their life compared to being hunted down by Bandersnacks and whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
All of these hostile things are trying to eat them. But are you telling me that to a man? Because I never saw any Loompa children nor women.
Oh, shit. He left them in
because they can't
land.
Work in a factory. They're not strong enough.
You're right. Fuck.
These guys are just male. You're telling me that to a man, these guys want to work in if there's not one that wants to paint
right.
or make music or be in politics?
Yeah.
Work for Loompa equality? Like, these big questions the film does not answer.
You're right.
I think
it was a different time.
If I recall correctly, they try to make a stab at making that less slavey in the slavery in the Johnny Depp one, and uh-huh. I don't think it was convincing.
Okay.
But
I will just say, like, Slugworth, I can see why Slugworth is in the number two here, because I don't think his marketing is good. Like, the Slugworth Sizzler doesn't have the same ring as the Scrumdiddlyumptious bar.
Plus,
right?
The man looks like a Bond villain.
Well, that's
like,
not actually Slugworth, right? So
it's not? I thought he was actually Slugworth.
No, so he's the assistant of Willy Wonka, who Willy? I'm going to call him Wonka. Who Wonka has paid to test these kids, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't get that.
No?
No, I hadn't got that.
You must have missed that scene because it explicitly says that.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, right. it's entirely possible.
Yeah. So not actually Slugworth, but I call him Slugworth just because.
Mm-hmm. So he's his assistant that he hired to impersonate Slugworth?
Yes.
Where do you get where do you get the vicious facial scar?
An Oompa Loompa slashed him.
They're feral Loompas. Feral Loompas. They just come at you crazy if you cross them.
And maybe he went to Loompa Land and encountered like a snark or whatever the hell they are.
Maybe there's a brutal like Loompa uprising, like an Attica style Loompa riot that he had to put down. And that's where he got the scar. every couple years, you got to have some. You got the chocolate river's got to run red.
Notice they said human hands haven't touched it.
Yes, exactly. I also got a kick out of the teacher trying to teach the kids percentages.
Yep.
And I'm like, this is the worst teacher of all time because he's just writing numbers on the board as if this is like, you know, QED. And then I thought it was especially funny where Charlie at the end's like, he only had two chocolate bars. He's like, I can't do 2 out of 1,000.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay. So that's the joke.
Yeah.
And again, it's a children's movie. I got to continue to remind myself.
It is good. But yeah, I mean, that scar does look terrible. I do think that Chocolate Room is really cool and really imaginative, you know, despite it being obviously foam and.
Yeah, it's too. The thing that's too bad is that river looks like Yoo-Hoo.
Yeah.
It's not chocolate. It's fucking,
not viscous enough.
It needs to be like I think they did fix some of that in the depth version. Like it was like appropriately CGI flowing chocolate and whatnot. But that looks like a diluted Yoo-Hoo bath, which you know, I don't know. No self-respecting Bavarian is going to be lapping that up by the fistful.
Right. But it's a real shitter because Wonka, when they walk in, says, everything in here is edible. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he screams and raves or rants about the fat kid drinking the water.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, look, fucker, you told me everything in here is edible.
It's true, but on the other hand, like, I do get his point that like you're contaminating his chocolate.
Right, but he said everything was edible.
That's true.
Go for it.
That's true. I know. Like I said, some of these moral lessons are fucked because like the fat kid's crime seems like that he just was unwieldy.
He's top heavy. Yeah,
he leaned too far into the chocolate and fell in.
It honestly seems like he and Veruca are very similar. You know,
really? Because Veruca's
one
just
of
terrible.
One of them is intensely greedy. One of them is gluttonous, which is in its way a form of greed.
Sure.
I really feel like they could have maybe diversified the sins a little bit better here. But you know,
maybe he's the son of Count Chocula and he just has an uncontrollable thirst. Like you're saying this is like a choice, but he's got an uncontrollable thirst for chocolate.
Yeah, maybe.
Like if he, you know, doesn't get it, he'd get weak and die. But Veruca, I think the only kids that were truly terrible are like Veruca and the TV watcher.
Yeah.
Just because like that TV kid is just like, come on, man. You just won the golden ticket and you're being interviewed and you're still wrapped up in like what you're watching on television and your dad's going to give you a 45 Magnum when you turn 12. Like that was pretty funny too.
Yeah.
But Veruca is just like the worst.
Yeah, I hate Veruca.
Yeah,
so much.
She wants her daddy to fire all of his work or like her. Then and like it's a sweatshop because he's like saying, I'll give you a pound for whoever finds a chocolate. And they react like, you know, that's a year's pay. Like this is something. This is Anne Hathaway and Les Mis. Like she's going to these women are going to have to go get the teeth pulled to make ends meet.
Yeah, no, it's bad scene. And I kind of have to fault the father here, too. I mean, the father is just such a pushover. He spoiled his daughter so much that now he can't control her.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, who can you blame? The mother and the father. Yeah, right? So totally, yeah. The movie spreads the blame around, sure.
Right. Okay, here's the one I don't get, though. Violet.
Okay.
Because I don't feel like Violet is inherently bad. Like, the Loompa Loompas make a huge deal about chewing gum all day, being revolting and like the worst sin one can commit. And I'm
right.
Like, it's gum. Like, who cares?
No, it's quaint that back in 1971, the biggest problem in like, you know, children's lives is they're chewing gum and spitting on sidewalks and sticking underneath school desks. And
right. Maybe that's, yeah.
I thought that was interesting because I saw this one where they did, like, from the 60s, the report on, like what teachers' number one complaints about students were. And it was essentially, like, tardiness and, like, mm-hmm. sticking gum on
now
furniture.
He keeps bringing the gun in.
Like. Yeah, now it's essentially violence and vulgarity and drug use in the bathrooms and things like that. So
right.
The other I thought was...
Maybe it's her competitive streak because she keeps making fun of her friend for not having chewed a piece of gum as long as her.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something about, like...
But the boastful nature
boasting,
of it.
Yeah.
But that's not what the Oompas gave the lesson on.
No,
Oompas
it
was
the gum
all
chewing.
About chewing gum like you're a cow.
Right. I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't... Yeah. Once in a while is fun. I mean, it seems like that's a very Quaker thing, right? Just be moderate in all your habits.
I suppose so, yeah.
The other thing I thought was interesting in the early goings of the film is where apparently a woman's husband was kidnapped by international terrorists because she has a case of chocolate.
They want it.
And then the fact that she had to think real hard about whether she wanted to give up the chocolate. What if an adult had won the golden ticket?
Good question.
Because that woman had no kids, and if she did, she would not bring them alive. That she wanted the golden ticket for herself.
Right.
And, like, what would Willy... I mean, I think Willy Wonka would just be like, when you sign... As soon as you sign a contract, one of the fine prints is you can't be over... I don't know, 12. You can't be over the age of 13. And then she would just immediately be disqualified and shoved in a chocolate tube.
Right. I mean, the potential for this contest to just be a complete bust is mm-hmm. very high, in my opinion. Like, mm-hmm. the people... Well, I don't know. Okay, so primarily kids eat candy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are certainly adults who eat plenty of candy, myself included, but it's primarily kids. So you would think the people buying the candy would probably be parents, mostly.
Right.
You know, some of them might just be dicks and say, no, son, we're not taking you. We're taking, like, me and your dad are going.
Sure, we need a vacation. What have you done? Your whole life's a vacation.
Right. So there's that potential. But the potential is greater, like you mentioned earlier, for just generally good people to be involved in this contest, like four or five of them. And then what does he do?
Yeah, it's good time.
Like,
it's
they
a good
all
thing.
Pass the test.
It's a good thing to have five children, four of them conform to archetypal versions of childhood evil.
Yeah.
Or what we'd have done.
I mean, I guess he just runs it again, you know? He says, you're all null and void.
Yeah.
If
that's the thing.
Not a single person wins, then none of you win.
It did seem like he had an immediate out where he could just call an audible at the end and do and invent some kind. Maybe that's why the contract was so long and finely printed that, like, it gave him every conceivable out.
Right.
So he could run multiple golden tickets. And obviously this did wonders for his sales side of his business. Like, people were buying, like the Salt family alone, the Salty Nut Company alone probably increased his production by 10-15%.
19,000 bars an hour.
It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for a Willy Wonka to just be like, "Oh, I didn't find my child protege there. Let's do a golden ticket 72."
Right.
72 season golden ticket.
And I assume that this kind of promotion,
they do
this,
that
this marketing was already a thing before the movie, right?
Like, maybe it's cuz I don't watch cartoons anymore, but I remember, like, how big breakfast cereals were, and they had, like, the prizes inside.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, there was this one year where they did the, like, find the captain. Like, there was this puzzle and you had to put it together and you had to find out where the captain, and they ran that back, like, back to back 3 years in a row until, I guess, kids stopped giving a shit about where the captain was and he can go fuck himself. But he could be held hostage on a Soviet submarine for all I cared by that time. But, like, I do feel like that they, yeah, if you hit, you know, if you catch lightning in a bottle, like, you get Subway Jared. Well, that didn't turn out well, but no. Like the Noid, or you know, some of these things, like, they become more like the Taco Bell,
the dog.
Yeah, the dog. What Chihuahua. Is that? Chihuahua, Yokiro Tango Taco Bell.
Right.
That shit, like, you catch lightning in a bottle and you just run it to death. Most interesting man in the world. People like it. We're just gonna shove it down the throat till they don't like it. Bud Bowl, same thing.
Yeah, I'm just curious if the movie gave the advertisers the idea or vice versa. I'm sure it was the other way
around.
It's
got to be the other way around.
Yeah. Marketers spend all day thinking about this stuff.
They do. They do. We should try that sometime.
Okay.
We should have the golden podcast. If, like, how would we even do that?
The Golden Podcast?
The Golden Podcast, where, you know, like, you download the right random bit, and it's like, you know, there's a special theme song, and you come tour the Bald Move headquarters. And
right.
Everything and in the office the is edible. just tell them that as a joke.
Right.
and the contract they signed says we can't be held liable for dental damage.
Yep.
The other thing I thought was funny, because I'm just putting out random observations now, is when I forget whose father did, but like someone tried to drum up small talk with Veruca's dad, Mr. Salt, and he goes, "What business are you in?" And he's like, "Oh, nuts!" And the guy recoils as if he said raping boys.
Right?
Like, why? Is the nut business just really disreputable?
More disreputable than the used car dealerships?
Yeah, or lawyers? Maybe he heard like, oh, maybe the salty nut company is like just renowned for being a sweatshop.
Wait, is this a Quaker thing? Maybe. Is it like a nuts versus oats sort of battle?
Oh.
I hadn't even thought of that until this moment.
You're right.
Maybe
you're right.
It is. I don't know.
This is the battle of the high carbohydrate foods. That's fucking nuts. You can't. It's got goddamn nuts.
I really didn't get that. Yeah. It's some joke for the parents that is supposed to hit.
Yeah, because he mugs like as soon as he says nuts, he turns around insane. It's insane.
It is. I think it was also interesting. You know, we're talking about the coincidence of getting all children involved in this contest.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but each room seems to be individually crafted to test a specific child.
Hmm.
There's the TV room, which is maybe the most blatant.
Yeah, that's the one. That's because the others I don't follow.
Well, the Golden Goose room, right? That's like
the completely edible room. Put the fat kid in it. Har har. Like, okay.
Right. I mean, that's what they're doing here. Uh-huh. The
good egg, bad egg. Like, why
the good
is that
egg, bad egg?
Uniquely...
is because she's greedy. She wants the fucking Golden Goose, right? Like, I want this thing that is like
ultra
the
rare,
proverbial and
about,
literal
yeah.
like peak ultimate. Enrichment device. Like, yeah. She wants it. He knows that she can't resist it, and down the chute she goes.
Mm-hmm.
What was the other room? Violet's was kind of
nondescript. No, it's the experimental room, but they had the experimental gum, which he, you know, knew that she'd want.
Right.
And that's the thing, is I love it when the kids, like, took the bait and ran with it, and Wonka is like, oh, no, stop, please,
yeah.
don't, you know.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't
feigning this,
yeah.
this concern.
He's like, oh, it's all going according to my plan.
Right. So I don't know how he knew ahead of time.
Well, and that's the other thing is like, was the fizzy drink factory part like Charlie's test and he failed it, yet he won anyway?
I think Grandpa failed it. Grandpa's a despicable human being here. Charlie went along. He got pressured into it.
Peer pressure. The Papaw peer pressure. It's famous. You can't stand up to the quadruple P.
I mean, that is the only scenario, like deadly scenario here, that is not instigated by a child.
Right. And also, I think it might be the only opportunity that you actually would have died, because they made it seem like, you know,
potentially, yeah.
Yeah, the chocolate tube was non-fatal. The kid being shrunk, they said the taffy puller, get him out. But,
although,
you know, Veruca's
going to the incinerators.
True. But only, which, you know, she's got a sporting chance because they're only on every other day.
She does. And there's a chance that Violet will not be juiced in time, and then she'll explode.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't think necessarily all those are fatal. Certainly, the TV one and the chocolate tube one is not. But Charlie's the only one who doesn't actively seek out some sort of disruptive behavior there.
Mm. Yeah, because you're right. He only goes along with his grandfather.
Right.
And boy, I thought this kid did a pretty good job, but the worst performance in the movie comes from Charlie belching and then his immediate reaction to, like, pantomiming swimming through the air as he's belching.
Yeah.
Like, really? You didn't think that needed another take? Like, scale it back? Come on, Mel Stewart. I know you're just cashing a Quaker check here, but can we get a second take of the the belching scene?
Well, there are a lot of problems with this scene. I mean, one of the many problems is the belching and his reaction to it. The other major problem being I can literally see the entire rig.
Oh, yeah.
That they're being strung up by. I mean,
and clearly
the
bubbles.
They might have as well have put it outside their pants, like
in,
the harness.
In Charlie's case, they did. Like,
right. Half
like
of it.
It's visible. But yeah, like, and then I clearly think they're thinking, like, oh, just fucking pump full. You pump it full of. Right. Of bubbles, and it'll hide the wires. We don't have to rotoscope anything. But no, you totally did. Like, it's awful.
Could they even rotoscope stuff at the time?
I mean, you can always rotoscope. That's just literally going frame by frame and painting something out of something. Like, you can
right.
easily
Was that
remove.
A technique that they even did at that point?
In 70s? It's,
like, early 70s, 71.
I mean, I don't.
I know they did it in Star Wars, but I thought that was pretty revolutionary at the time.
Like, Jerry the Mouse danced with Gene Kelly back in like the 50s or 60s, and that's all that is you're drawing on a picture frame. So,
right.
I would imagine you could airbrush out wires, but, you know.
Well, they didn't bother. I mean, you see the wires, you see the.
Yeah, this was Quaker Oats money. This wasn't like, you know, right. Raisin Bran money. This is Quaker Oats. This wasn't Fruit Loop money.
And apparently this was
this wasn't
not
Kellogg
a
or Post.
Like, this only became a big hit after the TV replays, reruns came
out. See, I saw that it cost $1 million, made $4 million, what seems like a modest hit, and
sure,
then made $21 million the next year when they re-released it, and then.
But it was like the 50-something most popular movie on the charts at the time, the Billboard, whatever.
Interesting.
Yeah, the box office. Because
it also got Oscars for, like, I believe it's song and visuals, and Gene Wilder got a Golden Globe for his acting.
Good.
So it wasn't, like, not recognized, but, I mean, I guess, you know, $4 million, it's not, even for oatmeal people, it's not a lot of money.
Right.
I think that is all the thoughts I have on the movie. Do you have any others there, Jim?
No, I'm good.
All right. Once again, thanks to Josh from Saxbaha for commissioning yet another. He's prolific. He's throwing around oatmeal money here.
I think so, yeah.
He's throwing around Raisin Bran money, commissioning four podcasts like this. Thank you for this and the other podcasts. Like I said, it's only the second time I've seen it in my life, I believe, and certainly the first time I saw it with a critical eye. And we laughed a lot. There's a lot. You know, Gene Wilder makes this movie, and it's really neat to see him as a relatively young man doing something kind of lighthearted, but also, as I think Josh said it perfectly, with this edge throughout. It was entertaining. So if you would like to commission your own podcast, it's easy. Go to baldmove.com/shop, and you can select either community commission, where you can commission a movie one share at a time. Once all shares of the movie are sold, then we take it down and we do the podcast as normal. Or if you're an impatient type, if you're the well-heeled, if you're rolling around with Quaker money, go ahead and do the solo commission, where you can make us watch any media that you want and make us do a podcast on it, and we will be happy to do so. Next time, I cheated and took a little peek. I see it's going to be the Paul Thomas Anderson, There Will Be Blood. Never have I seen that movie.
Me either.
So, and I hear it's one of the all-time greats. So I'm excited, and we'll be back in the near future on that. Until next time, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.